Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Hey there, Wednesday edition of the Steve Jones Show, back with you on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Sean Carey here, Steve there in the Sunbury Motor Studio soon.
Absolutely.
Soon. No, now. He's there.
I'm just hanging. That's what I do. I just hang.
It is the bye week. You have a couple more seconds. A little bit of time. A little more time here and there to hang.
Actually, I was working at Michigan State last night. Yeah. I was able to catch up a little bit, go to basketball practice this week, watch some of that. Went to football practice last night, watch that. Yeah. This weekend we will see how much I get to watch. I don't know. Because I am in an I don't know mode at the moment. The reason I'm in an I don't know mode is baby girl Jones up in New York State. Hasn't decided yet when she's going to arrive. She is scheduled to arrive, and considering her brother arrived exactly on time, she's scheduled to arrive Sunday. So, you know, I don't know if I'm traveling this weekend or not. I think I'm traveling this weekend regardless. And the because I think Kathy wants to go up early and be there. But that's where I am. It's a good spot to be in.
So the Christmas decoration weekend will be put on hold.
Oh, no, I don't do it. You know what? Years ago, I'd do that. Now, I'll probably do that. Oh, probably if the weather's okay after the Wisconsin game. Do it like that Sunday, because I'll have a basketball game on Friday night, the football game's on Saturday, and then I have another basketball game on Monday, then I got to go to Chicago. So Sunday, and it doesn't take me long to do anymore, because you see, I took out all the stuff that is time-consuming.
Yeah.
So it actually only takes me about 45 minutes. But I might do it then, because after that, see, I've got that section in November. I've got basketball Friday, the 9th. Football Saturday the 10th, basketball Monday the 12th, fly to Chicago on Wednesday the 14th, game the 15th in Chicago, fly back, and then leave the 16th for Rutgers, do the Rutgers game on the 17th, come back, go to Mexico on the 18th, do a game the 20th and the 21st in Mexico, come back on the 22nd, which is Thanksgiving, do what I need to do Friday, and then do the football game with Maryland at Beaver Stadium on the 24th. So I get that two-week span where I've got a lot, and then after that, I've got another home basketball game on the 27th, but at least that's at home. So I've got some travel days in there. I've got to go to New Jersey. I've got to go to Chicago. And I've got to go to Mexico in that area. So, yeah, I'll probably get that done in that area somewhere. It doesn't matter. It's holiday lights. Right? Yeah, it's got all the artistry of stick figures. But, you know. Okay, Paul Meyerberg, USA Today, is going to join us today. A perspective from a national point of view on what James Franklin said about great to elite. So we'll get into that with Paul today. And also Mark Wogenrich on the show today. Tomorrow, our high school roundtable. And also Tony Knopp scheduled tomorrow, CEO of... It was Spotlight Ticket Management. What did he change the name to?
I've seen it as Invite Manager.
That sounds right. Yeah,
yes.
Invite Manager. He's just really about as sharp gets. His segments are some of the more listened to segments we have because he just is so, he explains it in such a way where everybody can understand it. And the bottom line is, all of this is a business. All of it is a business. College sports is big business. Pro sports, obviously, big business. So how do you get people enticed and what's working and what's not working that's making whatever business better or maybe not so great? And that, you know, so we'll get him on to talk about that. And that's coming up tomorrow. And then we'll preview the Shikellamy-Lewisburg-Shikellamy group tomorrow. Okay, so we'll do that. Now, Lewisburg's playing Shikellamy, right?
That is correct, and it is Green Dragons homecoming at Christie.
Yeah. Great. So, what does it mean when they make you the homecoming game? Okay, so...
Oh, okay. I see what you did there.
That's just a joke. Just a joke.
I believe it's Sewan's Grove homecoming, too, this week, because I was looking at the remaining three games you got then back-to-back on the road, then senior night. So I would assume this Friday night will be a homecoming, too, for the Seals. Henry Hynoski bringing his Shamokin Indians to town on Friday night.
Oh, very nice.
Yes.
Very, very nice. Hmm. So... Yeah, so big stuff coming up this weekend. Looking forward to it. It should be a lot of fun. And we'll go from there. But, yeah, Matt Millen, by the way, has been shut down for the year on BTN. We'll get into Mark as to what, you know, what that means. And, yeah, that's going to be... That's going to be important. Yeah, and there'll be an important conversation with him about that. So, Yeah, that's. Boy, it's tough. With Matt, I had a long talk with Matt in September. Probably talked to him for at least a half an hour. You know, and now part of it was, hey, what's going on? How serious? Blah, blah, blah. What do you got to do? You know, every once in a while he'd cough, he'd explain to me what the cough is about, you know, I mean, things like that. And then other parts were telling funny stories and things like that. I mean, you know, there's still a lot of other things that Matt and I could talk about and do and have. You know, a couple of really, really funny stories. Really funny stories. So, but we'll get into what Mark wrote about as well. So I always look forward to talking to Mark anyway. I think, you know, Penn State is really, really fortunate to have some great beat writers. I think the fans are really well served by the Penn State beat writers. I mean, really well served. And Mark's one of them. So we'll talk to him about Penn State, Ohio State. We'll talk to him about Elite. We'll talk to him about Matt Millen. There's a lot to talk to Mark about today, and we'll do that as well. And then tomorrow we'll have a lot to talk with Tony Knopp, a lot to talk with Greg Wetzel tomorrow, a lot to talk with Zach Showers tomorrow. And
it's like Horty at this point.
Oh, why? Is Thursday now become a bad day, too?
Business meeting out of town tomorrow afternoon for suit.
At Albright?
No, a little further south than that.
Oh, we can identify all sorts of towns south of Albright. you know, I mean,
state capital.
Me.
Business meeting in the state capital tomorrow.
Excuse me, I've watched the movie Animal House. He's the only parent in the history of college that wanted to join his son's fraternity. I mean, come on. It just can't be happening.
And I could hear Mama Suit, "Why are you two playing beer pong? Oh, we're bonding. This is a father son moment. It's more than just beer pong."
So he's become so big, the governor's now meeting with him.
Don't think it'll be in a government building. No.
Well, I would assume it would be in an undisclosed location. I mean, you know.
That's true. It could be somewhere out on I-83. Right. It could be. Somewhere down the beltway. Right.
Let's be honest about it. A lot of high-powered meetings when you don't want anybody to know has happened at the Red Rabbit. All right. We'll come back with...
But only 3 days a week, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
That's what makes it so good. Perfect. Talk about timing. They'll never know we're here. I'm
extra
clever.
Dust on the fries, please.
I just want you to know I'm very inconspicuous. Nobody ever notices where I am.
Actually, it's Danville homecoming this weekend. Suit Light home this weekend. Mama Suit can't wait to see him.
Well, that's one parent. Even Cindy and Shemoka Dam had to laugh at that one. Come on.
So I was running on the mark this morning. She goes, "How'd I do?" And I said, You're fantastic. Yeah, it was wonderful. I said, call more often. She said you were very, very nice. Let's say absolutely.
You were very nice.
No, she told me to tell you that you were very, very nice to her.
But that's to be expected. Actually, just to let you know about the impression that her call made on me is that when I went to football practice last night, I actually talked to a couple of the coaches about this. I said, "Cindy from Shemoka Dam called up my show today," and she brought up. I said, "Not necessarily about how you guys played the game. It had nothing to do with that. About the principle of going for 2 points." And actually, it was an interesting conversation. So actually, it sparked more conversation after the show because of what she said. And then I was telling, I know what it was. And then this morning, we taped the Blue White Tailgate show with Jay and Todd Sadowski and everybody. And we were sitting in the group meeting, and I brought up the call then, too, about going for it on fourth down and what analytics tell you, going for 2 points. And point values, what analytics tell you. So believe me, Cindy, your question got more mileage, I think, than you ever dreamed, because I've actually brought up the topic in two different settings since, just because I thought it was an interesting topic. Now, I'm not changing the answer I gave in any way, shape, or form, but I wanted her to understand that in the analytics world, her question is a legitimate analytics is a big believer in going for 2 points because of the point value. Now, I added in the fourth down part because that is also another part that analytics is a big believer in. That, hey, look, you've got 10 yards, use the four downs to get there based on yards per play, yards per rush, yards per attempt, things like that. All right. So those are two areas where analytics is a big believer, where it goes against the traditional thought process of football. The traditional thought process of football is don't chase points, get your extra point, keep going. I've got a card that tells me at a certain point, in terms of point value, what I need and why I need to go for two. Well, you don't always have to go by what the card says, but it's there. And remember last year, and I brought this up to, it wasn't one of the coaches yesterday. I brought this up to, he's a coach, but one of the coaching administrators at Penn State. And we were talking about this on the sideline as practice was going on. And I said, "Kevin," I said, I talked about this. And I said, "Remember James in the opener last year went for two on our first touchdown?" He looked at me and says, "Geez, I forgot about that. That's right, he did." I said, then after it failed, I said they went for extra points the rest of the season. But, I said, it's not as if we haven't thought about it here before. And, we talk about basketball and analytics and the value of the three-point shot. The volume threes can lead to volume points. you know, the home run, the old Earl Weaver three-run homer is not new to baseball, obviously. I just mentioned Earl Weaver's name. But has become more into vogue now that home runs are more valuable than any other hit because, again, the run value of it. So, Cindy, you brought up something yesterday where they may have poo-pooed you, but traditional football says, hey, look, you don't make it. You're at a certain part of the field. You punt the ball. And tradition says, don't chase points. Take what you think's the sure thing. And that normally, not always, but normally is the extra point. Okay? But analytics gives a different thought process, and that's why Cindy's question was not just good yesterday, it was great yesterday. It was really great food for thought, and I hope she understands that in two different settings, I brought the topic up with other people, and it sparked a lot of conversation. Right? I mean, interesting conversation. No put-down conversation. There was no put-down conversation by anybody there. It was something like, well, yeah, you know, like Todd Sadowski says, I thought they should have gone for two after it was 19-14. Went, you know. So it brought up, it sparked good conversation, which is great. So Cindy, thanks. I'm glad she called on the mark this morning. And whatever she said, I hope she gave it to them, but good. No. Just kidding. All right. We will come back with more in a moment. It'll be another suitless week here on the show. Thus, the potential for another rating spike. On News Radio 1070 WKOK. Paul Meyerberg of USA Today, the national football writer, will join us in the next half hour. We're going to delve into a column that he wrote on James Franklin's postgame comments about being great and the next step to elite. Lottie wrote a smart, thoughtful column about that. We'll talk to him about that. Mark Roganrich from the Allentown Morning Call will be on to talk about two items. Number one, of course, Penn State football, and number two, the fact that Matt Millen is going to be shut down for the rest of the season, undergoing medical treatment. Mark wrote a column on that today. So we'll get into that with Matt, Mark as well at 4:06. It's always great to hear from you. Your calls provoke more conversation than you realize. That's why I love the calls. Love the calls. And again, you'd be surprised at how often I talk about calls I get to other people because it gives me a thought process and a read on what everybody is thinking out there. I think that's really important. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Always great to be joined by R.J. Anderson, the Major League Baseball writer for CBSSports.com. R.J., welcome back to the show. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
All right. The Cubs, a free-swinging group, without question, ran into Kyle Freeland and a former State College Spikes pitcher, Adam Ottavino, among others, last night. In the end, to you, RJ, what kept the Cubs, especially down the stretch, from A, not winning the division, and B, not advancing?
I think if you're trying to boil it down to one thing other than, you know, some substandard play here lately, I would point to their schedule. I suppose I should just point to their bullpen. And there was a few things working against the bullpen. One of them was injuries. You know, you think about it, they were without at least two of their top relievers for most of the end of the season. You know, Brandon Morrow has not thrown since July. Pedro Strop hurt himself recently. Carl Edwards Jr. has not been as effective as of late. And you combine that with the schedule. They played something like 21 games in 22 days down the stretch, including last night's game. And they had to really work the few trusted relievers they had left hard. I mean, Steve Cishek, I believe he appeared in six of the last 7 days. And, you know, Justin Wilson was worked hard. And Jesse Chavez was a blessing for them. But he also was worked pretty hard. And you combine, you know, all that workload together along with the guys you're missing, and it makes for a very tough environment, especially when you're trying to go deep into the postseason, and especially when you're having to turn over to the bullpen, you know, after five innings, six innings, and then have an extra innings game. So I think that was one of the big things that cost them, not only last night, but also, you know, in the past couple of weeks, just not having the bullpen depth due to injury and also because of the workload put on their upper relievers.
I think they also were in a mode where they had, 39 games this year where they either scored one run or got shut out. Only the Orioles had more or something like that. That's unusual for that kind of talent.
Yeah, you're right. That is a wild statistic to think about because the Orioles were obviously the worst team in baseball. The Cubs won 95 games. And, you know, yeah, we look at that lineup with the names there and we think, oh, this should be a good, consistent offense. You have Chris Bryant. You have Anthony Rizzo. You have Javier Baez, who was one of the breakout stars of this season. But you're right. You know, the inconsistency was maddening, and it's really interesting to think about what they did with their hitting coach, because Chili Davis, you know, earlier in his career as a hitting coach, he was pretty well regarded in Oakland. Went to Boston, things didn't quite work out there. You know, he only spent 1 year on the job here in Chicago, but you kind of wonder if he might be on his way out in favor of someone else.
It's a really good question. Now, what has made the Brewers such, and now look, the Brewers were a franchise and a team on the come last year. What put them over the hump this year that made them a division champion?
Well, they added two MVP caliber performers, and yeah, Lorenzo Cain and Christian Yelich, and I think that's a huge.
If you want to know
right
why
there,
everybody in Miami is so mad about everything, watching Stanton play for the Yankees and Yelich for the Brewers, it's another way to get Miami fans mad.
And they didn't get anything really of note in return. I mean, Lewis Brinson was horrible this season, and, you know, maybe one of those prospects works out down the road. But, yeah, a pair of bad trades for the Marlins. And, yeah, you know, you add those two to this group that already, you know, had a pretty good foundation in place. And they also had Jesus Aguilar turn into an all-star first baseman. And remember, this was a guy who, a pretty smart franchise there in Cleveland, thought that he was expendable. You know, they went out there and they spent money on Edwin Encarnacion and, you know, some of these other guys like Yonder Alonso, instead of giving him a chance. So, you know, they kind of found stars either through conventional means or kind of lucked into them, and you added that to an already good lineup. You have this outstanding deep bullpen. You have a rotation full of, you know, number four types. It's not sexy. You know, there's no ace there, at least by conventional measures, but it's a good team, and, you know, credit to Craig Counsell, credit to that front office, and credit to those players for putting it all together and not only winning the National League Central, but probably entering the postseason as the favorites to win the NL pennant.
All right. Of course, the Yankees in Oakland. I believe Oakland is going to go with what the Tampa Bay would refer to as an opener. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting. Oh, excuse me. I was just going to say it's going to be interesting to see if they do the opener, which is, you know, have a reliever start and then bring in a conventional starter, or if they're just going to do a bullpen game where they have Hendricks turn it over to another reliever and they just kind of keep the chain going that way.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting as far as the order they go in, because Tampa Bay probably did this more than anybody this year. Yeah, when you look at the record, actually Tampa Bay, when they did it, was under 500.
Yeah, because, you know, everybody talks about that Tampa Bay rotation ERA, or, you know, the starter's ERA, and they kind of forget, well, there was a guy named Blake Snell there who is arguably the best pitcher in the American League. So, you know, you take his numbers into account, and yeah, they're going to look pretty good. But, yeah, it's just going to be interesting to see what Oakland does tonight. They certainly have, you know, a number of recognizable names in their bullpen, you know, be it Familia, Rodney. Blake Trinan at the end of the game has been outstanding. I know he doesn't have quite the few ratings that some of these other guys do, but he is nasty. And if you're getting to see him for the first time tonight, look forward to that stinker. It is just disgusting to see that thing run out of the zone like it does.
What's interesting is you have a 100-win team playing in a one-game playoff. I mean, you want to talk about pressure of this thing. What have you thought about the one-game playoff? Do you like it because it's one and done in the pressure of it, or don't you like it?
You know, I'm of two minds of it. You know, from a fairness perspective, is it fair that the Yankees are having to play potentially one playoff game and then departing? No, not really. But, you know, the playoffs in general are not built to be fair. You know, they're built for entertainment purposes. And I think from an entertainment perspective, these wild card games accomplish what they're set out to do, and that's to entertain us and to thrill us. You know, there are two good teams on the field tonight, just like there were two good teams on the field last night. And, yeah, one of them's season's going to end, unfortunately, but that's kind of the point, right? So, yeah, it's kind of manufactured drama, but it's still drama, and we're still going to tune in and probably have a pretty good ball game tonight between two pretty enjoyable teams.
How much pressure is on the Red Sox?
That's a good question. You know, obviously having the best regular season record puts them in a position where there are a lot of expectations on them, and they certainly have the star power. They certainly, you know, have the executive there in Dave Dombrowski, who would like to win a ring, given, you know, he wasn't able to finish the job in Detroit. But I don't know if it's any more pressure than would be otherwise, because, you know, every year we basically expect Boston to compete, and we expect them to be there, if not in the World Series, at least in the ALCS. So I'm going to say there's a lot of pressure, but there's always a lot of pressure in Boston.
There is, no question. How do you feel the Red Sox handled Chris Sale? Because it seemed like in some ways we were watching spring training over again as they gradually stretched him out.
Yeah, and what's interesting about that is that despite, you know, ramping him up bit by bit, he was bleeding velocity. I mean, he lost at least a mile per hour in every one of his appearances since returning to the disabled list, and he was around 90 miles per hour in his final tune-up start. This is a guy who, for the season, averaged around 96 miles per hour in his fastball. Now, he's came out and said it's a mechanical thing, you know, he'll have it figured out and all, but that's pretty concerning, because if Chris Sale's throwing 90-mile-per-hour fastballs, he's not the dominant ace we, you know, have come to know him as. So that's something to watch for. You know, that's not to say he can't be effective still, but that's a big, big velocity drop for a guy over the course of, what, four starts?
Yeah, it is a big velocity drop, especially for a team whose middle relief has been suspect for a month.
Yeah. And, you know, that's probably playing right into whoever wins tonight's hands. Although, again, you know, maybe it is a mechanical thing, and maybe Sale goes out there and looks like his normal self, and we forget all about this talking point in a few days' time.
Right. In the National League, when you look at the Dodgers, who had to fight like heck to win the division but finally did, what do you like about the Dodgers? What gives the Dodgers some pause?
I think the thing that gives me pause is that I know on the season they were a very good team. You know, you look at the run differential, look at the underlying measures. They're a very good team. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But I swear I have never seen a team with this much talent win and lose on more ticky-tack stuff in my life. It seems like every single time I watch them play, they were either winning or losing on a fluke play or on nonsense. And that concerns me, because it feels like maybe something's missing here, and I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just a luck thing. Maybe, you know, I was just tuning into the wrong games. But it does give me pause. It makes me wonder if I'm missing something, and maybe the talent is obscuring something there. And I don't know what it is. I wish I had a theory. It just gives me a little pause. As for what I like, I mean, again, the talent level here is absurd, and they have a ton of depth. You're talking about a team that, you know, you look at that lineup, and I think they have, what, 10, 11 guys who had an OPS plus over 100 for the season? I mean, right. They are completely loaded. There's no reason they shouldn't be able to reach the NLCS. But, yeah, the consistency of their struggles does give you a little pause and makes you wonder if maybe we're all just overlooking something here.
At one point during the course of the season, everybody on the planet had to have Manny Machado. In the end, the Dodgers got him. How much did he help them?
Oh, he helped them a lot. You know, we can sit here and talk about their struggles and whatnot, but he's an MVP-caliber player. He is one of the best players in baseball. you know, his ability to kind of ping pong between both left side of the infield positions is huge for that team, given what they had, you know, injury-wise with Seager and even Turner earlier in the year. And, yeah, he's a great player. That was a smart trade on their part. They didn't actually give up any of their top prospects. You know, nothing against Diaz, but I don't think they're going to miss him. And same with the other four players they gave up. And, yeah, I think that was a good trade for them and a trade that they don't regret at all.
What does the – and we don't know if he's going to be out right away or not, but the injury's not great. What does the loss of Dansby Swanson possibly mean to Atlanta?
You know, it's interesting there because Dansby Swanson is obviously a pretty big name, and you're right. We don't know if he's going to be in the lineup or not, or if he's going to be available in the series whatsoever. But when you look on the paper, you know, Charlie Culberson, who figures to fill in for Swanson, actually out-hit Swanson this season. Now, I don't believe for a second Charlie Culberson is as good as his numbers suggest. You know, you look at some of the underlying measures, and he's gained a lot of power this season, but it hasn't been accompanied by your usual telltale signs. You know, he is pulling the ball more, but he's predominantly a ground ball hitter. He hasn't really, you know, improved his exit velocity or any of these other metrics. But when you just look at on the paper, you know, Culberson's actually been the better hitter this season, and those career numbers aren't too far apart, believe it or not. So, yeah, you're probably losing a little bit on defense, and I think Swanson's going to be the better hitter going forward, but it might not be the downgrade it seems to be when it comes to name value.
A year ago, the Indians were, hey, you know, look at Cleveland. Cleveland didn't get there. Cleveland's under the radar right now, and it's really odd to even think of the fact that the Houston Astros are slightly under the radar right now. How do you look at those two teams?
I think I picked Cleveland to win, and I think I've been the high man on Cleveland all season because I look at that team and I see a club that's better suited for postseason baseball than regular season baseball. And the reason I say that is their biggest weakness has been the middle of that bullpen. And now you're in October, now you can lean on your rotation, you can lean on the two or three relievers you really trust. Yep. And you can, you know, go these games because you have the built-in off days every 2 days or what have you. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if Cleveland's a much better team now than they were a month ago. It wouldn't surprise me if Terry Francona really leverages Andrew Miller, Brad Hand, Cody Allen, and, you know, maybe one other reliever or two in his stash. And, you know, maybe they even throw Shane Bieber in the bullpen. And he's a guy who, you know, he's, again, not a big name, but he can definitely be effective. He can give them a little length as well. So I think there's a chance Cleveland's going to knock off Houston, and it's not because Houston's a bad team. That is a very, very good team, but it's just the nature of you know, these short series, and it's the nature that Cleveland is probably a little underrated because they had an underwhelming record in what was a very weak division. So, yeah, it's going to be a fun series, and you're talking about a series that's going to feature, what, four or so of the top players in baseball, and Ramirez, Lindor, Bregman, and then take your choice among the ever Astros players. You know, you can throw Altuve or Correa or any of those guys in there, and I'm not going to argue that, yeah, there's a lot of talent going to be on display in that series.
In fact, I thought the acquisition from San Diego of Brad Hand was one of those really efficient acquisitions that I thought meant a lot to postseason, not as much to regular season.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And unfortunately for Cleveland, Adam Simber hasn't quite pitched up to what he did in San Diego. But they got, you know, they got Hand, multiple seasons of Hand at that, in exchange for Mejia. Well, Mejia didn't really have a spot in that Cleveland lineup. And I know he's a well-regarded prospect overall, but there's a chance he's not a catcher. And if he's not a catcher, all of a sudden his bat goes from pretty interesting to, you know, more run-of-the-mill. So I think it was a pretty opportunistic trade on Cleveland's part, and we'll see if it pays off.
Now, one extra arm that can get you one extra out means a lot. RJ, absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for the time you gave us today in the analysis. Great, great talk.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. RJ Anderson, Major League Baseball writer for CBSSports.com. Always some great info. Still to come on the show today, Mark Wogenrich, Allentown Morning Call. We'll talk about Penn State football and about Matt Millen. Final half hour, we're going to talk with Paul Meyerberg of USA Today on what James Franklin said after the game about great and elite. As we continue on today's show, brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Don't forget, it's homecoming this week at Danville, a public service message of this station and the Ad Council. Our thanks to R.J. Anderson of CBSSports.com, their Major League Baseball writers. We discussed the playoffs. Cubs are out. Rockies beat them last night, 2-1 in 13 innings. So now Colorado gets Milwaukee. The other half of the bracket will be Atlanta and the Dodgers. And tonight the Yankees and A's will play. The winner plays the Red Sox beginning on Friday at Fenway Park. And the other half of the bracket is Cleveland and Houston. So that's the way the baseball playoffs will break down. And thanks to RJ for being on the show today. Next half hour, Matt Millen, BTN announced today they're going to shut him down for the rest of the season because of everything he is going through. We'll have Mark Wogenrich from the Allentown Morning Call on, who's talked to Matt about this. And also we'll talk to Mark about the game on Saturday night. And speaking of the game on Saturday night, Paul Meyerberg from USA Today on the comments James Franklin made after the game about great to elite. And we'll talk about that as well. See, I think where Penn State is right now, Penn State in a four-team playoff. And I am not in favor of expanding the four-team playoff, at least not as of right now. Maybe in 4 or 5 years, I might have a different opinion of it. But I think four for the moment is fine. I think it puts certainly heavy relevance on the regular season. And right now I'm okay with four. So Penn State, in my opinion, in the last 3 years, including this year, happens to be one of the top eight teams in the country. But that also means that being among the top eight teams in the country, you're still on that borderline as to getting into the 3-4 spots for the college football playoff. And, you know, what do you do to get over the top to do that? Because they've gone toe-to-toe in the center of the ring with Ohio State in the last 3 years. Penn State won by three, lost by one, lost by one, right? Each time it was the team of the three games, it was each time the team that finished won the game. Penn State finished in 2016. Ohio State finished in 2017 and 2018. So what does it take to get over the top? Does it take, because look, let's bottom line this. That speech was intended for the recruits that were up there. Because a little more quality athletic depth probably makes a huge difference in this game on Saturday night. Where instead of having to play 80 plays, maybe said player plays 60 to 65 plays. And thus, you've got more in the tank in the last 8 minutes of the game because you were out for 15 plays because the person that stepped in, there was either very little, if any, drop-off if you put that person in. So you're looking for that athletic quality depth within your program. So then, obviously, when guys move on, you have somebody else already ready to play. I think that's part of what he did the other night. And see, what the key with what Ohio State's been able to do, Ohio State's usually been able, not only have their stars normally perform well, but they've usually had somebody else who's also a really good athlete step up and make a play. On my chart, I put down in order who the primary people are at a position. So I will list the number one receiver. In this case, it was KJ Hill. I listed Paris Campbell as the number two. I listed Terry McLaurin as the number three. I listed Johnny Dixon as the number four. And I listed Benjamin Victor as my number five. Well, in the end, it's Victor that made that incredible catch and run that put Ohio State in front 21-20. Or, excuse me, put Ohio State on the board to make it 26-21. Okay? 26-21. He was my number five guy on there. You saw how athletic he is. See, that's what you're looking for, that even somebody who's a little bit further down your list can still make plays like that.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.